So I can remember literally a couple days after graduating college, I went to my first television job as a producer booking guests for the 5:30 newscast up in Burlington, Vermont. However, my next guest decided after he graduated college, he is going to run for a state representative seat here in Connecticut. Joining us in studio is Jack Pavia. And Jack, welcome to the show. And also, congratulations. Did you just graduate like 5 seconds ago?
Yes, thank you so much. Saturday.
Oh, well, congratulations. So. Amazing. So now newly graduating and you are running for state rep. I love this.
Absolutely. Yeah. Jump right into it.
I mean, first of all, tell us a little bit about you, where you came from, and what even made you want to run for state rep.
Yeah. So I grew up in Norwalk. I've been there as long as I can remember. I majored in political science and, you know, did a minor in communications as well in college. So it's not like any political involvement sort of out of the question. I had been sort of continuously engaged in my local party back home, which for any young people listening is very easy to do. And there's not many young people that are kind of in that room. And so, you know, it gives you certainly, you know, makes people excited whenever there's a young person in the room.
But clearly, because you saw when you came in here, I'm like, what? This is exciting. Not to harp on young, but yeah. It is amazing, especially in politics, to see how many young people are starting to get into it. But how do you get started? Some people don't realize. So that's really good perspective, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I think, and then, you know, when thinking about why to run, it's you know, I'd be one of 151 in the state house. And I think it's really important to have all perspectives at the table, because I think those perspectives are what inform policy. And when you're doing policy, you're governing everyone. And so, you know, I think from my experience, COVID hit when I was 15. I spent a lot of my formative years in online school. I grew up in a time of rapidly changing technology and watched as friends that were told that computer science was the way to go 6 years ago are now facing the reality of AI automating away their jobs. And so I look around and I say, you know, there are certainly people in the legislature who I have a lot of, you know, overlap with their, in terms of their ideas and their political outlook, but I don't really see anyone who's shared sort of my life experiences. And I think that's honestly what makes an effective legislature.
I mean, it is interesting, Jack, because, you know, we talk about sometimes that we need more diversity as far as, and you know, we focus on, you know, male, female, or race, but age is one that I think sometimes gets overlooked. And, you know, and specifically, you know, when you talk about police or teachers, you know, we do talk about, hey, we want to be able to have the students feel like, you know, somebody can mirror what they're going through. And it is an interesting point that from a lawmaker standpoint, you know, as far as youth is concerned, certainly not someone in their 20s, but, you know, people who have gone through as recently as, you know, 10 years ago, not even, you know, something like a COVID, from your perspective, you know, in the schools, for example, or technology advances, I mean, that is something that is lacking. That's just a fact, because, you know, if you look at our current legislature, we don't have a lot of college grads or even 20 to many, even 30 year olds who are serving. Why do you think that is, though?
I think that is because in a lot of ways, local politics is geared towards people who are homeowners, people who have a lot of time on their hands, people who are perhaps better off wealth-wise, you know, because you have to have time. And a lot of people spend their 20s sort of trying to put together their career, trying to, you know, find someone that they're going to be, you know, together with and start a future with. And so it's a time of a lot of shifting things. And this is something, you know, I experienced too. I mean, I spent my first month and a half of campaigning not living in the town in which I wanted to represent. And that creates a lot of friction because it's like, okay, you know, I can't show up to X or Y event. And I'm starting a different job at Norwalk Transit District in a few weeks. And so there's a lot of kind of shifting life things happening. But I still think it's important to sort of stay engaged in the community. I mean, you know, a lot of people feel really stressed, of course, about what's happening at the sort of national level. And I really have found a profound level of, frankly, sort of control and happiness in sort of engaging in these, what otherwise would be sort of, you know, I mean, boring, almost just local affairs, but they actually mean a lot.
Yes.
Our schools are, you know, the primary way we interact with like a public good. You know, it particularly throughout our childhood and with new parents. And so I've found, frankly, just like a lot of peace in making it so, although despite the national situation, are like, buses are running on time and our, you know, schools are delivering the resources they need to kids. These kind of small things that bring us together in a room physically, you know, getting to know people. I think that that's something that's sort of lacking today.
I mean, so I feel that from a journalism standpoint, which is why I, on this show specifically, just focus on news pertaining to the towns and cities that are mostly our listenership. And it's not because what happens in Washington doesn't matter. But I think to your point, Jack, there is such a profound, a much bigger impact on what is being passed in your town, you know, your town halls or in your school budgets or even up at the legislature, where the average person sometimes has no idea what even came out of the legislative session every year.
Totally.
You know, and so I love that kind of focus. And I love how you said control, because it's not a matter of taking control of people, but it's understanding like you can control a little bit better the narrative of Connecticut's politics and kind of cancel out a little bit more of the noise around what's going on nationally. I think that's a huge deal.
Absolutely. And when people look nationally, you know, not that we have to dive too much into it, but, you know, I see a federal government that's telling us that our neighbors are the enemy, you know, that immigrants or people who love differently or people who need, you know, reproductive health care that we may not fully approve of. You know, I look at that and say, I want to get to know my neighbors better. And I think communities are strongest when neighbors know each other, despite, you know, differences in ideology or religion or ethnicity or life experiences. And so I've found that local and state politics are a really great way to just get to know each other and trust each other more.
I also think, Jack, to that point a little bit differently, I do think we, and I'd be interested to see what you think. I do think, though, here in Connecticut, a lot of the times, because we do have a supermajority, a lot of the times, if things don't get fixed or changed or addressed appropriately, the federal government does get blamed when it's something we could have taken better control over. And I don't know your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, what I'd be curious sort of what sort of issues.
So, for example, if you look at this legislative session, we had two or three different, I thought, viable options, one that came from the Republican Party, one that came from the Democratic Party, for more health insurance options for families, because the marketplace is not very large right now. It's very expensive for health insurance for the average person, for the average business. And both ideas got rejected during the legislative session. So we are basically telling Connecticut families that, once again, sorry, we just couldn't do anything. And that would be three or four legislative sessions straight that we just couldn't find more solutions for families. And when you ask the legislature why that happened, the federal government gets blamed, even though that would be 4 years, so over two different administrations. We couldn't do anything here in Connecticut. That's just an example.
Totally. Yeah. And I think, you know, the more voices and the more eyeballs that we have on local and state affairs in this case, in terms of following those bills and advocating for them, the more success we're going to have, because the federal government is just in such a place of, you know, stagnation in terms of policy innovation. You know, I've been encouraged by, you know, the governor putting forward a, you know, proposal for healthcare that's, you know, the Connecticut option would be based on private markets. I'm also a believer in the public option. You know, I believe healthcare is a human right. And, you know, I think that we can do that at the state level. You know, it makes it a little bit more complicated because of the whole, you know, we have a smaller budget and a balanced budget and less of, you know, less of just a pool of people to sort of all buy into this and negotiate lower prices. You know, it is talking to people in the municipalities, like talking to, you know, my friends in Norwalk local government. Healthcare costs are squeezing people. I mean, that is really been the just massive, like, double digit jumps year over year of healthcare prices, and, you know, insuring our teachers, insuring, you know, other municipal workers. It is a huge issue and certainly a focus. And I think, you know, in order for us to sort of believe in politics again, we have to make sure to talk about our aspirational ideas. You know, it's important to negotiate once you get to the table and say, you know, give and take. But, you know, when it's particularly off legislative session, when we're kind of negotiating, what does our society want to look like? We have to sort of retain that imagination. And I think universal healthcare is one of those really just high level goals that is going to be very important.
In studio, we've got Jack Pavia here, who is running for state representative for the 142nd district. So that'd be representing Norwalk and New Canaan. And Jack, I believe you do have somebody who also is vying for the Democratic nomination.
That is correct.
Okay. Are you going to the convention this weekend?
I am. So that's, yeah, we have the state convention this weekend. My convention will be next Wednesday, but this weekend, actually, you know, I figure it's going to be, I'm a delegate to that convention as well, so I'll be voting on it, and I figure it was a great opportunity to get involved, you know, people who perhaps haven't been involved in the political system before, and so we're going to be bringing up a bunch of people on the train to ride up from, you know, in my case, Rowayton, to Hartford, and we'll be picking up people in Bridgeport and New Haven and East Norwalk and Fairfield. So it's going to be great. Hopefully it's some good community building, and also, you know, frankly asserts the importance of commuter rail in Connecticut.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And I know that is one thing that you are very focused on is transportation, correct?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So, I mean, Fairfield County, when you think transportation, you think traffic, right?
No question.
That is what everyone thinks. And that's because we have, I think, a transportation system that is not very resilient. And in that sense, you know, I think we have a lot of drivers, which just a geometry problem creates a lot of traffic. And so we're lucky that we have a lot of options theoretically in terms of trains and buses and some pedestrian access, some bike access. But I really think that if we invest in that sort of diversity of options, if we make sure our trains are running faster, which I'm sure you've heard a million times on this show, and invest in our bus system, not only by talking about it through legislative negotiations, but actually raising it in a sort of public manner of, like, you know, taking the train, like actually doing the thing. And because I think, you know, if you are a customer of something, you are more likely to be holding than the people who are running the service or the product accountable because you're actually affected by it. And so, you know, it's not only just saying in a theoretical sense, hey, we need to improve the train. It's actually riding the train, taking people who perhaps don't normally ride it on it to say, you know, show of like support for this thing. And so I really think we can deal with our traffic by taking the 10% of people on I-95 who definitely don't want to be driving on I-95 and would much prefer a viable option in terms of transit or walking or biking, and, you know, make sure that they have that option, make sure that they can get there quickly and conveniently. And that also wraps in with housing and, of course, planning and everything. But, you know, I think that's going to be really important for just a quality of life issue.
And then something else that you mentioned before, Jack, which was artificial intelligence. That's something you were really passionate about as well. And we actually had our first piece of legislation. It was honestly kind of watered down, but it was our state senator here in Milford, Senator Maroney, who I don't know if you were in touch with Senator Maroney. He's been on the show many times, but he's been very focused on AI and really kind of cybersecurity, but like online, social media, and just having more protections for kids and everything like that. We finally passed an AI bill. It was pretty watered down, but at least it's a start. It still puts Connecticut kind of in front pace of any other states in the country. But what would you want to do to tackle AI policies?
Yeah, I forgot that Senator Maroney actually represents this area. Senator, if you're listening, you're awesome, and I want to work with you. And I'm just very inspired by the action that's happened in Connecticut. And yes, this was, I believe, you know, a bill that, you know, it left open the, you know, door for more action. And that's what I want to pursue. You know, this bill, of course, made it so employers can't, you know, basically have to tell people, prospective employees applying for a job, whether they used AI to determine the fate of their future, some other guardrails with children. I really think AI is a social contract issue. I think it's an issue of saying, when you tell our young people that they're going to have a future if they do well in school, if they work hard, if they do what their parents told them to do, and then you suddenly tell them 5 years later that, oh, sorry, we like innovated you into obsolescence. That's a kind of scary thing. And I think our politics isn't ready for a generation of people who have been so screwed over by a system that has told them that they're just obsolete. Because you have AI executives basically saying two things. They're saying either we're going to be made way more productive by this and we're going to be these kind of superhumans who can just kind of do anything with these tools, or wait, no, we're obsolete. there's no use for us because computers do things better than us. And so I think we need to have a conversation of, hey, why is it so much easier for an employer to implement a digital tool as compared to hire a human who have healthcare needs and labor standards? How can we change our tax code perhaps to accommodate humans being hired instead of just the automation away of jobs? And so I think it really is a social contract issue, because if we want people to believe in our politics, we have to create a system that they feel that they can be bought into, and they won't just be removed from it when it's convenient for, you know, company's bottom line.
Totally. And I also think we need to start, I think, equipping the next generation, which, you know, is in some regard your generation. Like, yes, you guys grew up with technology. I'm a millennial, so I did not, you know, but I think we certainly should even have, I don't know how you feel about this at the education like standpoint, but even having like literacy, online literacy, AI literacy also incorporated in school. I think that's like another part of it too, so that we also equip our kids with feeling like they're not competing with AI, but that it is a helpful tool and that they can out-compete with it essentially for a job as well. Like,
totally.
There's two sides to that, I think.
Yeah, I mean, computers are a tool, and that's kind of the good news and the bad news of, you know, computers can be, you know, create great good and
totally.
Also create...
It's like social media.
Yeah, 100%. But yeah, to your point with social media, we sort of just implemented it without any, you know, real guardrails for safety or for algorithms or for any number of things. And now we have people who are, you know, subject to body standards that they can't, you know, feel like they can't keep up with. And it creates a lot of depression and anxiety. You know, feelings of stress about the world. You'll scroll through reels and you just like see all these horrible things happening across the world. And that's overwhelming for one person. So yeah, I mean, it's a neutral thing in that sense. But I think we just have to be aware of those kinds of effects. And also, frankly, you know, what kind of wealth it creates, because is it going to just enrich these people, you know, at the very, very top? You know, you have someone like Elon Musk, he's worth double the GDP, the entire GDP of Connecticut, just one guy. And so that's, you know, are these technologies going to enrich people at the very top, or are they going to create a lot of wealth for the rest of us as well?
Well, Jack Pavia, I'm excited to see what happens next for you, whether it is the 142nd District, again, representing Norwalk and New Canaan as state rep. But in general, it seems like you are going to be very entrenched in Connecticut politics. And so I'm sure this is not the last time we will speak. Thank you so much. And if people want more information, we will link it to our website with Jack's podcast on voiceofct.com. Thanks, Jack.
Thank you. Great talking.
Yeah, you too.